Next on Hope from the Word, Pastor Bill Lubkemann examines the ups and downs in the life of Joseph.
Joseph could have been whining about his circumstances. He could have been complaining about all that he endured. He could have refused to do anything until he was rescued. That's what I would have said. I ain't doing anything until you get me out of here, Lord. He could have said, Lord, get me out of here. It's your fault. It's my brother's. It's my father. It's this and that. And he had all the reasons that any of us could ever have. He didn't understand what was happening, maybe, but nevertheless, he served the Lord faithfully. And we can learn from that today, because wherever we're at, whatever we're doing, you don't have to be working for a church or a Christian ministry to be serving the Lord. Whatever you do for a living, if you do it as unto the Lord, God will bless you.
Give me one pure and holy passion. Give me one magnificent obsession. Give me one glorious ambition for my life. To know and follow hard after you.
If anyone had a roller coaster experience in life, it was Joseph, whose life is recorded in the book of Genesis. Today on Hope from the Word, Pastor Bill Lubkemann examines Joseph's trials and tribulations and his faithfulness to God through it all. Please join us in Genesis chapter 39, and as you turn there, a quick reminder that you can find out more about Calvary Chapel Marlton through our website found at ccmarlton.org. Now, here's Pastor Bill with today's message.
If you will open up your Bibles to Genesis 39. As I look through the last 10 chapters of Genesis, that was what our reading was this past week, it became pretty clear to me pretty quickly. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that today's message was going to be about Joseph. And I would love to cover every one of these chapters in detail. We did that a few years ago. We're going to do that again someday. But for now, I was looking through here trying to figure out, well, what seminal event is there in the life of Joseph that we could talk about? We can't look at everything. And there are so many of them, from his birth and his upbringing as Jacob's favorite son, born to his favorite wife, Rachel, the special treatment all throughout his life from his father that brought him the scorn of his brothers, the dreams that he had that ultimately wound up in slavery, but ultimately wound up saving a nation, his good attitude and his hard work through everything that happened in his life, his service to the Pharaoh, how he saved the Egyptians from the famine, and then even his own family, his brothers who had sold him off, he even saved them as well. He did not repay evil with evil, but instead he showered goodness and blessings upon his brothers. This man, Joseph, was blessed beyond belief here, and he certainly managed to pass it along to others. He was in a position, you know, to do a lot of lording it over. He could have beat up on his brothers. He could have killed them, hung them out to dry, what have you. He could have done whatever he wanted to do. He could have been in a position to make a lot of money for himself, make himself very wealthy, but instead he remained faithful and humble to that he was called to do. And as I looked over these chapters over and over and over again, I kept coming back to chapter 39 here, which really was part of the reading from 2 weeks ago. But I decided that's where we're going to focus. It seemed like that's where the Lord was leading. We see Joseph in this chapter going out of his way carefully to avoid evil. And when it could be avoided no longer, to run away from it. And that's why I called the message today, Flee from Evil. This is a message that it should be important to each and every one of us here today. And if we pay attention, we can learn a lot from it. As I said earlier, Joseph here was the favorite son. He was the firstborn son of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel. And one of the first things we can learn is not to have a favorite wife. No, just joking. I knew I had to put that in. One of the things we can learn is not to play favorites, actually, with our children, certainly. But it was Jacob's doing so that started the ball rolling on a lot of these bad things that happened here. Somehow I doubt that Joseph's coat of many colors was really in technicolor. You know, the colors back then weren't like they are nowadays. They didn't have all the chemicals and all the processes that we have. And if we saw that coat nowadays, my guess is it would look pretty drab by our standards. But for the standards of that day, it must have been a very nice coat because it was this special coat that his father had given to him, and it was one more reason for his brothers to hate him. And hate him they did. Talk about Jacob, his father, being blind to what was happening. It's hard to believe there could be so much hatred that it built up to the point where they almost killed him. It's hard to believe that, and it's hard to believe his father would not have known that or seen that. I can only assume that his father's partisanship, his father's favoritism, had to be pretty outward. It had to be, you know, I would think the neighbors knew it, the relatives knew it, the people that lived down the street knew it. I think it was pretty obvious. And again, something simple we can learn as parents and that we can easily avoid. If you don't have four wives, but you have four kids, don't treat them favorites. Don't have favorites. So the problem here really goes back at least to Jacob's willingness to marry multiple times. And even though, by the way, the scriptures, even at that time, didn't call for this. You know, I was watching that JAG show on TV last night. It was on Friday night, and it's a court case show about the military. And this guy had four wives, and they were court-martialing him. And he was justifying how he had four wives. He loved all his four wives. They all loved him. They came to the court and said how much they loved him and all that other kind of stuff. And they were all confused about it. And they were having an argument, and this one guy said, well, it's in the Bible. You know, there's a lot of things in the Bible. Murder is in the Bible. Rape is in the Bible. There's all kinds of things that's in the Bible. The Bible is just full of all kinds. You have to just read the context to find out if it's in the Bible because it's an example of something good or of something bad. Because there's examples of both in there. You need to read the whole thing, the verse before, the verse after, the chapter before, the chapter after. That's why we're reading the whole book here, because then you can find out the whole story, and you can find out what it's all about. And they wouldn't say dumb things like, well, it's in the Bible, because the Bible said God would unite one man and one woman. And the two, not the three or four, the two would become one flesh. And so, yes, it is in the Bible. They were right. But what's in the Bible is that the two would become one. And they didn't have a Bible back then, but I think they knew what God's plan was. I think it was very clear. And I think that marrying multiple times, it was wrong then, and it's wrong now, and they knew it was wrong. They did it anyway. I think it was well known. Now, it was bad enough that he did that, and he started off his problem that way, and then he had a favorite wife, and that led him to have a favorite son, and that led him to take special care of his favorite son, do things for him. And so he set himself up, Jacob did, for failure, and he set up his son for failure. And now we have in chapter 37, his sons out in the field, and Jacob sending little Joseph, the youngest brother, off to check up on his older brothers. Joseph saying, go find out if they're okay. Find out what's going on. And so here you have the other brothers out in the field. Benjamin wasn't born yet, so there's 10 of them out in the field. Here comes our youngest brother. He's going to check up on us. He's going to rat us out. He's going to go back to dad, tell him, you know, he'll find something to say. He'll make it up if he needs to. He'll lie, whatever. We always get the raw end of the deal. We don't get treated fairly. Here comes this little kid, you know, and we're going to do something to him. And furthermore, you know, we can't stand the dreams he's been having either. Not only is our dad treating him like a king, but he's having these dreams that he's going to be a king, and we can't stand that. We're going to put an end to it. He's dad's favorite son. If we get rid of him, he won't be dad's favorite son anymore. Plus, we won't have to listen to those stories about those dreams. Maybe we'll get treated fairly for a change. Maybe they were treated unfairly, but, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. I'm not justifying why they did what they did. I'm just saying I think there are reasons for it. Reuben talked him out of killing the boy. You know, that's what they wanted to do. So they threw him in a hole in the ground, a cistern that was dry, and they sat down for a meal. Along come these Midianite traders who are also descendants of Abraham. They're also called Ishmaelites. They had intermarried the two tribes, but they were all descended from Abraham. And so they pull Joseph out of the hole, and they sell him as a slave. And the traders take Joseph down to Egypt. And they sell him into slavery. He's sold to Potiphar, who's the captain of the guard, literally the chief of the guard. He's probably kind of like the leader of Pharaoh's Secret Service detail. And that's kind of where we start up here. He's the guy that does all the planning and everything to make sure everything goes right. And I'm sure it wasn't as complicated back then as it is now, but he was an important man in Israel. And so that's where we're going to pick up the story here in chapter 39 of Genesis, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. So Potiphar, meaning devoted to the sun, was a name that was connected to the religious system there in Egypt. And this fellow Potiphar, he had no idea what kind of a bargain he was getting. Joseph was going to be worth more than all the other slaves the guy had in his household. And we're going to see he does have other servants in his household. And when you see servant, you can read that as slave. Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. Isn't this an amazing thing? And this is, by the way, another thing that is every bit as true today as ever. Whatever it is that you are going through, the Lord is with you. He's with you. Joseph was sold as a slave, living in a foreign land where they didn't speak the same language, they didn't dress the same way, their customs were different. You could argue that what he's going through is probably worse than what most of us have ever gone through, most of us. But in spite of all that, the Lord, it says, was with Joseph. And here he is, the age of 17, that this is happening to him. Imagine when you were 17. He lost his freedom, he lost his surrounding, he lost his friends and his family, but the Lord is with him. And you know, I'm reminded of Isaiah 41:10, which says, "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." You know, somebody shared this verse with me many years ago on the eve before I had my wisdom teeth out, which scared me to death. And I have to see the oral surgeon again pretty soon. I'm not as scared about it this time. But I read this over and over again, brought my Bible to the doctor, read it, sitting in the chair there waiting for him to do it, read it, "The Lord is with me." Well, I sure hope he is. And I hope they know what they're doing here also. You know, the first time I went to have my wisdom teeth out, I didn't know this. It hadn't been shared with me yet. Actually, the first time I went to have my wisdom teeth out, I don't think I was even saved. And I went in there and I sat down and I told my boss, "I'm having my wisdom teeth out on Thursday morning. I won't be back to work till Monday." So I went over to Willingboro there. That's where I grew up, and my doctor is still over there. Sat down in the chair. They took this x-ray and everything, and they said, "Okay, we have everything we need. Make an appointment to come back and have your wisdom teeth out." And I said, "Wait a minute. I thought I was having them out today." "Oh, no, this is just a preliminary office visit. You know, we have to..." You know, the guy said, I can still remember. He said, "You're an engineer. You understand. We have to make plans. We have to, now that we took the pictures, we know what we're going to do." I said, "Buddy, if you don't take them out now, they ain't never coming out." Because I got all psyched up for it. But obviously, it wasn't to be that day. I went home Thursday morning. I didn't bother going back to work. I didn't go to work on Friday. On Monday morning, I went back to work. My boss and my friend said, "How was it?" I said, "Wasn't bad at all. Didn't hurt at all." I didn't tell them I didn't have them out. They didn't look in my mouth. I said, "I went to McDonald's when I left there." "Really? Well, it wasn't that bad then." Well, then I wound up, true to form, I told the doctor, if he doesn't do it then, he's never going to do it. So I never went back until they were killing me. And by then I had gotten saved and met some new friends. And by then, they had to come out. I made the appointment to go back. I think it was at least a year later. By then, I had a new job, so I was able to get two more days off from work. I set it up for Thursday morning. This time, I really did. I read this scripture over and over again that my friends share with me. And when I woke up in the recovery room there at the doctor's office, I was just, you know, the anesthesia makes you giddy and everything. And I couldn't believe it was over and it didn't hurt. And it was so simple. And I was so relieved. You know how you feel after something like that. And I was just laughing so loud. They were laughing out in the lobby and the waiting room. The nurses were all laughing. I can still remember everybody laughing. And I thought, well, I am sure glad that somebody told me the Lord would be with me. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I still read this verse every time I go to any doctor. The Lord is with you, okay? Whether you're sitting in a doctor's office or whether you're in the hospital. And he always comes through 1,000%. We can be separated from our friends and family. We can face a hostile, unfriendly, terrible, horrible situation. But the Lord is always with us. And you know, I had a few surgeries a few years ago, and every place I went, there was not even was the Lord with me to give me peace, but there was even Christians there everywhere I went. I went in for a big surgery. They took me in. The nurse was getting me ready. Her husband was a youth pastor at some church. You know, then I woke up. Some other nurse is a Christian, and I got to my room, and some other Christian comes in to visit me. It was amazing. People from the local church there in Willingboro, you know, came over. It was a Baptist church. They were witnessing to people in the hospital. They came into my room. God has people everywhere, and he himself is with you. Even if there's no people there, he's with you. No one can ever separate us from our God, from his love for us. His love endures forever. It reaches out to us no matter where we are. And it's true with Joseph here. Not only is the Lord with Joseph, but he sees to it that Joseph prospers. The circumstances are really, really bad, but God's blessing is on him. And it says here, he prospered. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. And his master saw that the Lord gave him success in everything he did. And so Joseph found favor in his eyes, the eyes of his master. And Potiphar wound up making Joseph his attendant here. You know, we're not talking here about a little bit of prospering here. This is big time prospering. I think it's so much prospering. Don't worry, I'm not preaching health and wealth. But it's so much prospering here that whatever Joseph sets his hands to is blessed in a big way. If he's cooking dinner, he's making the best dinner that this guy Potiphar ever ate. If he's organizing the guy's bank accounts, well, the monthly statements are added up correctly every month. They're computer printed. If he's cleaning the yard, man, the lawnmower never worked that well. We're talking about clear and outrageous evidence of God's blessing. So clear and outrageous. It had to be clear and outrageous because this guy noticed. Potiphar noticed. And what a testimony it is when you are following the Lord in all that you do and he is blessing you because of it and those around you. Joseph could have been whining about his circumstances. He could have been complaining about all that he endured. He could have refused to do anything until he was rescued. That's what I would have said. I ain't doing anything until you get me out of here, Lord. Sit down there and do nothing. He could have said, Lord, get me out of here. It's your fault. It's my brother's. It's my father. It's this and that. And he had all the reasons that any of us could ever have. And I know for certain I would have done just that, at least at the beginning. But Joseph saw the Lord's hand in his life. He must have believed those dreams. He knew something was up. I don't think he knew exactly what, but he knew something was up. And he could feel the Lord's presence. He knew the Lord was with him. And he put forth his very best effort each and every day. When he got out of bed, and I have a feeling he didn't get much sleep, but he had to learn a language, learn the customs, learn how they dress, take care. This guy had to learn a lot at the age of 17. He didn't understand what was happening, maybe, but nevertheless, he served the Lord faithfully. And we can learn from that today, because wherever we're at, whatever we're doing, you don't have to be working for a church or a Christian ministry to be serving the Lord. Whatever you do for a living, if you do it as unto the Lord, God will bless you. Here in this case here, Joseph was serving in an idolatrous country, working for an idolatrous guy that was named after the sun. There weren't any Jews around him. There weren't any Christians around him. There was no church, no Bible, no nothing like that. And God blessed what he was doing. And whatever it is that you do for a living, if you do it as unto the Lord, he's going to bless it. And the folks around you are going to notice. Does your boss see the Lord's hand in your work? He should. And if you're working the job as unto God, then he will. And if you're not, then you need to consider carefully what this is saying here. If Joseph could serve the Lord so faithfully in these really hard, tough circumstances that he was in, then we don't have any excuse today. We have the whole Bible. We know the whole story. We know the beginning, middle, and the end. He just knew a little bit of it. And because of his attitude and workmanship, the Lord blessed him. And because of the Lord's blessing, Potiphar couldn't help but notice. And he put Joseph in charge of everything. This was on-the-job training because in a few years, he's going to be running Egypt. So he didn't have to worry about selecting what college to go to or how he was going to learn or anything. God put him right where he needed to be. He could get on-the-job training and be raised up in that position. And he wasn't just in charge of everything. It says here that Potiphar actually entrusted everything to him. He trusted him. He didn't just have a slave laborer here. He had somebody he knew he could trust. Such a person is worth their weight in gold. You know that if you have any friends that you can trust just totally and completely. It seems like they're few and far between nowadays. But that's what this guy was. So here he is, still a young lad, the age of 17, and this is his first management position. Verse 5, from the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now look, Joseph was 30 when he appeared before Pharaoh. He was in jail for more than 2 years. So he was living with this guy from when he was 17 to sometime before the age of 28. He was there for a while, starting out at a real disadvantage. We already saw that. He didn't know the language, the customs. They were an ungodly people and an ungodly place. But here it winds up that his master sees and recognizes the Lord's blessing upon him. And he allows Joseph to be in charge of everything, entrusted with everything. Joseph basically had the care and the trouble of running the household. And at this time, servants and whatever, I don't know, maybe it was like the White House or some big mansion where you need a staff to run it. He was in charge of all that stuff. All Potiphar cared about was when he came in, if he had food to eat. That was it. Everything else was on Joseph's shoulders. He trusted him completely, and that's quite a compliment. Now, verse 6b. Now, Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?
Joseph saw sin for what it truly was, and may we do the same. He was faithful to God in the face of this great temptation. You've been listening to Hope from the Word. We're currently in a Through the Bible series. You can hear this message or more Hope from the Word with Pastor Bill Lubkeman by going to ccmarlton.org or wherever you find your podcasts. Pastor Bill's messages can also be found by downloading the Hope FM app on your smartphone or tablet. And finally, if you'd like a CD copy of the message, please call 856-983-1662. Again, that's 856-983-1662. We'd love to have you join us at Calvary Chapel of Marlton, either in person or online. Our Sunday service begins at 10 a.m., and there's a Wednesday evening service at 7. To catch us online, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Calvary Chapel of Marlton. Or just go to our website for the link at ccmarlton.org. And if you'd take a moment to write to Pastor Bill, it would be such a blessing to us. We're thankful each and every time we hear what God is doing in our listeners' lives, and we want to pray for you too. Either email us through the website at ccmarlton.org or call 856-983-1662. We'll continue our Through the Bible series next time on Hope from the Word with Pastor Bill Lubkeman, a presentation of Calvary Chapel of Marlton.